This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Warum nur an der Oberfläche kratzen? Bei einem Atemwegsinfekt ganz dünnes Eis.
Wenn Erkältungsviren auf die Bronchien schlagen, packt Umkaluabo den Infekt mit der Wurzel. Denn es lindert nicht nur die Symptome, sondern bekämpft auch die Erreger.
Umkaluabo.
Unaussprechlich, aber ausgesprochen gut.
Zu Risiken und Nebenwirkungen lesen Sie die Packungsbeilage und fragen Sie Ihre Ärztin, Ihren Arzt oder in Ihrer Apotheke.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur einen Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Thanks for downloading the World Tonight podcast for Thursday, the 27th of February. I'm Jane Hill. The Prime Minister is in Washington tonight. He handed President Trump a letter from the King, inviting him for an unprecedented second state visit to the UK. The President later suggested there could be a trade deal between our two countries. The former Foreign Secretary Jack Straw will give us his verdict on the two men's discussions. The self-proclaimed misogynist Andrew Tate lands in Florida after Romania lifted its travel ban on him and his brother. Did Bucharest come under US pressure to let the brothers go? We'll have an assessment from inside Romania. And we remember the great Gene Hackman, who's died at the age of 95, with one of the last directors to work with him. With a hint of a flourish, the Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer in Washington today produced an envelope from his pocket, which he handed to the US President, sitting to his left, during a fireside chat in the White House.
It is my pleasure to bring from His Majesty the King a letter.
Well, that letter invited Donald Trump to the UK for another state visit. It was made very clear that a second such visit is unprecedented. The Prime Minister leaned over and placed a hand on the President's shoulder. Donald Trump described the King as a great gentleman and said his signature was beautiful. All very congenial in a room in the White House full of journalists. But everyone watching knew that Mr. Starmer had to be very careful with his language. The two men moved on from that for talks, which at a news conference in the last hour they described as productive, with the focus on ending Russia's war against Ukraine. Donald Trump's opening comments at that news conference were striking.
Today it's my privilege to welcome the Prime Minister of a very special place, the United Kingdom, to the White House. Prime Minister Starmer, you've been terrific in our discussions. You're a very tough negotiator, however. I'm not sure I like that, but that's okay. Very, very special person.
Well, he also welcomed the increase in UK defence spending, which was announced just this week.
The disaster in Ukraine shows exactly why it's so important for the United Kingdom and other NATO partners to make large investments in their defense capabilities. In many cases, 4% or 5% of GDP would be appropriate. I know that they're raising it. I just read a great article about the work you're doing in the UK as to the military. You're raising it quite a bit, which is a great thing to do for your country. It's a great thing to do.
Well, there had been an extraordinary exchange with our own Chris Mason during the earlier fireside chat when Chris raised the issue of the US president having called Ukraine's President Zelensky a dictator. Donald Trump replied to that saying, "Did I say that? I can't believe I said that. Next question." Well, we'll talk to Chris in the coming minutes. Let's hear a little though first from Sir Keir Starmer on what should happen in Ukraine the day before Volodymyr Zelensky visits Washington.
You've created a moment of tremendous opportunity to reach a historic peace deal, a deal that I think would be celebrated in Ukraine and around the world. That is the prize. But we have to get it right. There's a famous slogan in the United Kingdom from after the Second World War. That is that we have to win the peace. And that's what we must do now. Because it can't be peace that rewards the aggressor, or that gives encouragement to regimes like Iran. We agree history must be on the side of the peacemaker, not the invader. So the stakes, they couldn't be higher. And we're determined to work together to deliver a good deal.
And when the leaders then took questions, one reporter asked Donald Trump whether the Prime Minister had persuaded him not to put tariffs on the UK.
He tried. He was working hard, I'll tell you that. He earned whatever the hell they pay him over there. But he tried. I think there's a very good chance that in the case of these two great friendly countries, I think we could very well end up with a real trade deal where the tariffs wouldn't be necessary.
Well, let's find out the thoughts of the former Foreign Secretary Jack Straw, Foreign Secretary under Tony Blair, of course, from 2001 to 2006. Hello, a very good evening.
Good evening.
Lots to listen to and watch this evening. What did you make of it all?
I think it went better than certainly sceptics in the UK were anticipating. And as good as Sir Keir Starmer could possibly have expected. And everybody was waiting, especially, fair enough, the British media, for some misstep by Sir Keir, but it didn't happen. And I thought that he dealt with, for example, the question about what Sir Keir thought of Vladimir Putin very deftly by simply saying, well, everybody knows my views on Putin, and moved on to the next question. So, also some sort of unexpectedly, as it were, good takeaways, not least on the Chagos Islands, because we had Foreign Secretary David Lammy yesterday saying that it was up to the US as to whether we went ahead with this deal, and President Trump indicating today that they were going to discuss it some more, but he intimated that he thought it was likely to be seen as a good deal by the United States.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, lots to pick through there. And of course, Ukraine was a focus, and I hope we'll come onto that. But I am really interested, this idea that Donald Trump came up with quite late in the press conference of a potential US-UK trade deal and without tariffs. I mean, that is a win for Sir Keir Starmer, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, look, it depends what's in the trade deal. Look, this is far better than anybody expected. So far, so very good. With trade deals, famously, the devil is in the detail, and it could be proved particularly tricky in respect of food, because there are different standards. It's not saying for a second that US food is unhygienic or unhealthy, but they just have different standards. And of course, there'll be a high level of anxiety by our farmers who already have enough anxiety. So that would have to be looked at very carefully. But certainly, having a new trade deal with the US is something which the previous government tried to achieve, and it would make every sense, because at the moment, my understanding is that we're still operating on the, as it were, the residual trade deal that we had through the EU. And obviously that's not satisfactory now that we've been outside the EU for as many years as we have.
Yes. I mean, did you get any sense that President Trump had perhaps said that slightly off the cuff and that hadn't been anticipated? Or would your sense be that that was absolutely something that the two men would have discussed behind closed doors?
I thought on something as large and important as a trade deal, that would have been on the list of talking points for President Trump, and without any question. So I'd be astonished if it had not been discussed across the table with Sir Keir.
Really interesting. Really interesting. We must leave it there. Very good to have your perspective. Thank you so much, Jack Straw, the former Foreign Secretary, of course. Let's get reaction as well from the other side of the Atlantic. Matthew Bartlett joins me, who worked in the US State Department during Donald Trump's first administration and is a former Republican strategist. Good evening to you. Good evening from London, anyway. What was your take on what you've seen tonight?
Yeah, Jane, good evening from across the pond. And watching today's high-level diplomatic talks between the two presidents, one would say it went rather swimmingly. This was a very, very, key and critical day for UK-US relations. And it seems as if this is off, again, to a wonderful start, in large part due to the special relationship that our countries have. A interesting opening to this personal relationship between the president and the prime minister. Obviously, different personalities, different political backgrounds. Yet it seems as if they found common ground and truly got along and started the conversation on critical details with everything from the international peace process for Ukraine to some of the bilateral processes and issues surrounding trade, as the secretary mentioned. So this was a big day here in Washington.
I mean, you're talking about common ground. You're sounding very buoyant. I mean, how was that achieved? To what extent, for example, did the promise of a second state visit to the UK please and perhaps even flatter the president?
Again, in international diplomacy, yeah, flattery. It's a currency, and it appears that not only does President Trump have a personal affinity due to his lineage, but to the royal family as well. So I think that is very much appreciated, not just by President Trump, but by all Americans. Again, that special relationship that we have, and that has been combined with certain policy concessions or points, including defense spending, proposals around peacekeeping troops. So this is a lot of critical detail that you are starting to see, the opening salvo through this meeting, which will hopefully lead to positive outcomes.
I do want to talk to you about Ukraine. A slight glitch on your line, but I'm really, really interested to try and get your perspective, because President Zelensky arrives tomorrow, Friday, in Washington. The two men talked about Ukraine and peace a lot, but is your sense that there is, though, still a lack of clarity, really, as President Zelensky arrives? I mean, he's going to want security guarantees, and I'm not sure we found out from these news conferences tonight whether that was going to be forthcoming.
Yeah, you are largely correct. Sometimes war is much easier than peace, and it is critical. We've seen past relationships, U.S.-UK relationships, lead to a misguided war. And now, hopefully, we will see the beginnings of enduring peace. We certainly don't want a misguided peace, concessions to the aggressor. Donald Trump is a rare bird in American politics and even international politics. Recently, flattering Vladimir Putin and making outrageous false statements around Zelensky. Yet what did you see? He can turn that around. He can harness the power of the contradiction and hopefully lead to better outcomes.
Fascinating to talk to you. Thank you so much, Matthew Bartlett there. Thank you, who worked in Donald Trump's first administration. Apologies for some of the glitches on the line there, but I think we definitely got a sense of his perspective and use of the word swimmingly. Let's put all of that to our very own political editor, Chris Mason, who is travelling with the Prime Minister, of course. So much to digest, Chris. Your take on what's come out of these press conferences tonight?
Yeah, hello to you, Jane. Huge amount to digest. I'm just back on the bus heading to the airport after this meeting between the President and the Prime Minister. I think Keir Starmer will leave relieved and a sense that it went, I think, pretty well outwardly in terms of certainly what we were able to see publicly. There was a real awareness from his team of him stepping into a spot of jeopardy today, because the President loves the public stage, the theatricality of the role, those extended moments in front of us lot as reporters in the Oval Office and then in the press conference in the last hour or so. I think the point you made just there in your final question to Matthew was a key one on Ukraine, precisely what might the US backstop, as it's been labelled, amount to, these security guarantees. The president suggesting that the presence of Americans on the ground as part of this minerals deal that will be signed tomorrow with President Zelensky should be, ought to be enough. But we know that the UK and others would like to see America offering air cover as a backstop. Now, that of course leads to the potential that such air cover would have to be used in a potentially aggressive way, responding to any actions from Russia. And that's a huge step for any president, let alone a president like this one, who is keen to avoid foreign military adventure. So a lot of detail around the practicalities of a peace deal still to be worked out. There was talk from the Prime Minister, wasn't there, about winning the peace? Again, reflecting your earlier conversation that securing and delivering peace can be harder than starting war. So it seems like there's progress on that question of Ukraine, but a huge amount of detail yet to flesh out.
Yes. Well, also detail to come. Certainly, this was Jack Straw's view on that announcement, if we call it that, of a US-UK trade deal. I mean, Donald Trump talking about that quite late in the press conference. I mean, that's going to be the headlines tomorrow, isn't it, about a trade deal without tariffs?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely fascinating. I mean, firstly, the reference to the avoiding of tariffs when they import taxes are being threatened of being slapped on lots of other countries, or are being slapped on lots of other countries. But then more than that, the suggestion from the president of a trade deal. Downing Street had gone into these talks talking up the possibility, the prospect, that the their keenness for closer business ties, particularly in the area of the technology sector. For some time, there's been a scepticism of the prospect of a trade deal, not least because if it was really broad-based and included, for instance, agriculture, there would be the potential that would decimate British agriculture and be politically unsellable. So it'll be interesting to see in time what the specifics of any deal are likely to amount to, how narrow they might be, not least because we know the Prime Minister is also keen on what he calls this reset with the European Union, and at least in part trying to deepen trading relationships with the EU, albeit outside of the customs union and the single market, those two big economic structures of the EU. So managing the balancing act there won't necessarily be easy. I think Downing Street would say that that might, though, amount to them trying to, as they've always argued, keep a foot in both camps, if you like, straddling both sides of the Atlantic, Europe on the one hand and America on the other.
Chris, as ever, thank you. Safe travels home. Chris Mason there, travelling with the Prime Minister. Now, let's turn to other news here tonight. The number of people sleeping rough on a single night increased by 20% last year in England. Official statistics show that 4,667 people were seen sleeping outside last autumn. That's a near record high. While London has the highest number of rough sleepers, the problem is increasing at a greater rate in the rest of England. Our social affairs correspondent Michael Buchanan reports from Cambridgeshire.
Finding the homeless in rural areas isn't easy. They hide from view, move about, but they're here in growing numbers. Hello. Behind some bushes, we see an orange tent. There's also a cooking pot, a jacket, some bottles of water, but there's nobody home.
We can check that again in the morning.
Anyway, so I was trying to get council informed. There was 8 council informs.
We head into Wisbeach town centre and find Alex, who was sleeping in the shadows last night.
Currently I'm homeless and I'm looking for somewhere to live. So.
Where did you sleep last night?
I slept under a staircase.
Was it cold?
Yeah, it was very cold.
We'd actually interrupted Alex, who was sitting outside a Subway shop, as he was chatting to his friend Jenny.
I worry about him. He was out in the cold one day, it was raining, and he kept rolling his trouser legs up.
Yeah.
Now that is a sign that he might have hypothermia.
Alex has been rough sleeping for 2 years.
What made you homeless?
Well, being kicked out of mum, she had a 3-bedroom house, but my little brother and sister become 16, so the house got split, and that was about, but yeah.
And you lost that?
Yeah, I lost that.
Many of the jobs in this Cambridgeshire town are seasonal, in agriculture, and low paid, which can make keeping a home precarious.
I believe there's a lot more out there. It's very difficult to find, as you can see here, how entrenched people can be.
That's John Heathorne, who works with the Ferry Project, a local charity. It currently has more than 40 homeless people living in its hostel and self-contained pods.
One of the main factors is regular income and enough income to privately rent a property for themselves. In order to private rent, the private rent landlord sector requires a contract. They like to see a contract with 40 hours on it so that they know that they're going to get their income.
I was at rock bottom. I was coming from the bottom. I feel like I'm myself again.
David has been living in one of the Ferry Project's pods for about 6 weeks now, after spending 6 months living in a shed.
Because all I had is like a duvet, and basically I was laying on concrete, do you know what I mean? Freezing. I couldn't sleep. I was up and down. I was walking around quite a lot.
How many hours sleep a night do you think you were getting?
Oh, I wouldn't say. I was getting about 2 hours if I was that.
He'd been raising his 4 children alone when he breached the terms of his tenancy. His children went to family, and David was made homeless.
My daughter kept missing the classes and things like that. Since I've come into the Ferry Project and got myself a roof over my head, she's doing all the lessons. She knows I'm safe. It don't just affect me being homeless, it affects my kids as well, you know what I mean?
Brexit has changed the nature of homelessness around Wisbeach. There are now more British rough sleepers than Eastern Europeans. But some still fall through the cracks, as we discovered a few hours later when we returned to the orange tent we'd found earlier. There was a man and a woman in the tent. They didn't speak English, so I used a translation app on my phone.
Homeless.
Homeless, yes.
So there is a couple in there. They are Lithuanians. They say they've been living in the tent for about a week or so. They lost the job, is all I could really make out, and they are now cold and homeless.
We headed to a field on the outskirts of Wisbeach, and at the edge of a lake we found 2 tents. We'd been told a couple slept here, but when we approached, there was no one there.
This highlights the problem of rural homelessness, because people can virtually sleep anywhere. That's why a lot of experts say this annual snapshot is flawed, that it significantly undercounts the homelessness problem, because lots of people simply aren't found and the count is carried out.
Many people feel that rough sleeping is getting worse, that it's become more visible, and these official figures point to a growing problem. But in many parts of the country, rough sleeping is even worse than these near-record high statistics highlight.
Michael Buchanan there in Cambridgeshire. The main headline so far tonight on The World Tonight: Donald Trump has praised Sir Keir Starmer as a tough negotiator at a news conference between the two leaders at the White House, where they discussed trade and a ceasefire deal for Ukraine. Now, the self-proclaimed misogynist and online influencer Andrew Tate is back in the US in Florida tonight, along with his younger brother Tristan, after Romanian prosecutors agreed to let the men leave Bucharest, upending a travel ban that's been in force for 2 years while they've been under investigation. It comes after the Trump administration lobbied for the return of the brothers' US passports. They are joint US-UK citizens. The men were first arrested in Romania in late 2022 and are due to face trial there on allegations of rape, trafficking minors and money laundering. We'll have more from inside Romania in a few minutes. The brothers are facing separate, unrelated charges of rape and human trafficking here in the UK. Both men deny all the charges against them in both civil and criminal cases. Police in this country have linked Andrew Tate to what they've described as the quite terrifying radicalisation of boys and young men in a report last year into violence against women and girls. Matthew Dury is a lawyer representing 4 British women who are bringing civil cases here, accusing Andrew Tate of rape and coercive control. How have they reacted to today's developments?
They are disgusted, distraught, dismayed. They're traumatised by this, to think that the most powerful man in the world, Donald Trump, and his administration could bully the Romanians into letting them go. They just don't understand how this has happened. It's been reported and publicly admitted by the Romanians that the Trump administration raised the issue of the Tates with them. We all know how this works. We've all seen The Godfather. You know, you raise the issue and you expect results. And that's what the Trump administration does. I imagine they were explicit, but even if they weren't, the implication was very clear. Allow the Tates to leave or else.
Well, at a news conference, a Romanian government spokesman, Mihai Constantine, denied that Bucharest had come under any outside pressure to allow the brothers to leave the country.
It was done on a legal basis, and as far as I know, judicial control still exists over them, and they will have to respect an agreed legal process. So in terms of the departure itself, I have no basis to comment in any way that it was a consequence of any pressure from any external entity to our country.
Well, as he left Fort Lauderdale Airport in Florida a few hours ago, Andrew Tate told all the gathered reporters that the accusations about him were essentially a conspiracy.
I live in a democratic society where it's innocent until proven guilty, and I think my brother and I are largely misunderstood. There's a lot of opinions about us, a lot of things that go around about us on the internet. We've yet to be convicted of any crime in our lives ever. We have no criminal record anywhere on the planet ever. Our case was dismissed on the 19th of December in Romania under the Biden administration. And our prosecutor recently decided, because we have no active indictment in court, to let us go and return.
So why did Romania agree to let Andrew and Tristan Tate leave the country? The US Special Envoy Richard Grenell raised the issue of the brothers with Romania's foreign minister at the recent Munich Security Conference. Andreea Georgescu is a reporter at the Romanian news channel Digi24, and she's been telling me how people in the country have been responding to the Tate's release.
There are fears that that discussion that our foreign minister has had with the American official can be perceived as a form of pressure. And there are fears that maybe even the prosecutor might have felt pressure from American authorities to lift that travel ban. There are no evidence regarding this, of course. And we have to say that the Romanian foreign minister has said that he didn't perceive the discussion he had with the American official as a form of pressure.
What do people in Romania think about this? Is this an issue in public discourse at all?
Yes, it is quite an issue in public discourse. We are all wondering if it's not something that maybe, I don't know, the Trump administration has done in order to help the two influencers that, let's face it, have campaigned online in favor of Donald Trump for months before he was elected president.
And therefore, what are the chances that they will return to Romania for that hearing that you talked about at the end of March? I know that's the ruling, but do people really expect them to come back on that deadline?
Well, actually, if you talk to people on the streets, if you talk to politicians, they are quite skeptical about the two brothers returning. Actually, I saw what Andrew Tate told reporters in the United States when he arrived in Florida, and he didn't seem quite willing to return to Romania. And it's another interesting detail. His brother, Tristan Tate, posted 2 days before he left, they left Romania, a video from his backyard in near Bucharest, and the caption was, "I will be missing this home." If you are actually returning to that home, why do you say you will be missing it? It's quite unclear, and I think that only time will tell if they will be coming back. But in the hypothesis that they will refuse to come back, and we will be faced with the possibility of arresting them and putting the two brothers on the most wanted list, it is quite improbable that the United States will be willing to return them to Romania, because let's not forget, Andrew and Tristan Tate are also American citizens.
They've also had an awful lot of their assets returned to them. I mean, they claim to be extremely wealthy men, and we know that some of their properties, some of their cars are being returned to them.
Yes, the lawyer has transmitted media here in Bucharest that they managed to get back part of their properties. I think there were five lands in Romania, a few of their cars. They had a huge collection of cars, and they also had their bank accounts unfrozen. The bank accounts were actually frozen from 2022, when they were initially charged with money laundering.
Andreea Georgescu there from the Romanian channel Digi24. Well, Andrew Tate is popular in far-right circles and with young male followers who voted in large numbers for Donald Trump after the Trump campaign made a concerted effort to reach that group through podcasts and with influencers. Andrew Tate had previously said he was going to move back to America after Donald Trump's election victory. 2 weeks ago, he wrote on social media that the Tates will be free. Trump is the president. The good old days are back. As President Trump sat with Prime Minister Keir Starmer in the White House earlier, he was asked about the arrival of the Tate brothers in Florida, and he said twice he knew nothing about it. Let's discuss with Ali Breland, who's a staff writer at The Atlantic. A very good evening to you. Who inside the Trump administration is pushing for this? Why? What's going on here?
Hi, thank you for having me. We have a little bit of an idea. Richard Grenell, Trump's special envoy, has been reported to have tried to pressure the Romanian government into lifting travel restrictions. And he's on the surface. Like, this is very clear, right? Then there's other people like Paul Ingrassia, who formerly represented the Tate brothers in a different case, who works as the liaison between the Department of Justice and the White House, who has tweeted about how he's a fan of the Tate brothers, has tweeted Tate influenced things about the quote unquote matrix. It's unclear as to what role someone like Ingrassi would have played, but he's another example of someone besides Grinnell who is in the administration that is like very clearly interested in the Tate's well-being.
Okay, so that's Paul Ingrassia, who's a former legal representative for Andrew Tate. He's now there in Washington. What he, others in the administration, what do they ultimately get out of it? Is it some sort of thank you for people who voted for Donald Trump? Is it that?
That's a good question. Again, like, we don't fully know, but like, there's a couple of different ways that this like could shake out or what this looks like. In one sense, like, you are right. Like, it feels like red meat to the base. This is like another example of Trump freeing all of the January 6th protesters who were in jail, pardoning all of them. It's a sort of another example of Trump kind of like sticking his thumb up in the face of his political adversaries. This is something that like might not even necessarily be that politically like valuable. You're already seeing people, prominent right wingers like Ron DeSantis, say that he doesn't support this. But it's very clear that like this administration is very interested in revenge and upsetting its perceived enemies. And they correctly understand that the Tates are someone that are not liked by their enemies. And I think that it's sort of a move to coalesce the base and piss off the opposition.
And when Donald Trump was asked about it a few hours ago and said he didn't know anything about them being back in Florida, I mean, could any of this have happened without the president knowing?
It's possible. I mean, you truly never know. It's possible that he intentionally didn't want to know. It's possible that it came across his desk and he decided it wasn't worth paying attention to. But I mean, also, that's like not an excuse either. Like, even if that is the case and he literally does not know in one sense, it's almost certainly the case, and I could be wrong, but it's almost certainly the case that he would be okay with this on some level, and that would be anticipated by his staff. The fact that Ingrassia and Grinnell work for him is already an indication of, you know, what is permissible within the administration.
Ali Breland, good to talk to you. Thank you very much from The Atlantic. Now, let's take a few minutes to remember Gene Hackman, who's died at the age of 95. When he was in acting school in California, fellow students voted him least likely to succeed. Certainly, it did take him quite a few years to achieve his great success. He was 37 when he got his first major film role in 1967's Bonnie and Clyde. But in a career spanning decades, he went on to feature in some of the most memorable films of all time. He won two Oscars for The French Connection in 1971, the second for Unforgiven, directed by Clint Eastwood. Gene Hackman gave up acting more than 20 years ago and chose to live out of the spotlight with his wife Betsy in Santa Fe in New Mexico. The couple were found dead in their home there yesterday. Police say the circumstances are suspicious enough for investigation. But Gene Hackman briefly broke his retirement to work on two documentaries about the U.S. Marines.
People say that the Marine Corps is different from all other military organizations anywhere in the world. I'm Gene Hackman, and I was a Marine.
That is from a 2017 documentary, We the Marines, which Hackman agreed to narrate. He had joined the Marine Corps when he was just 16, lying about his age to get in, and served for 4.5 years. Well, Greg McIlvery is the director of that documentary, We the Marines, and I asked him how he'd convinced Gene Hackman to take part.
We begged him. I knew that he was in the Marines, and over the past 40 years, he's probably done some of the best voiceover work I've ever heard by any actor. And I've always wanted to use him in a film, and we do an IMAX film every year. You know, we've had a lot of different narrators, you know, Meryl Streep, Robert Redford, Helen Mirren, but Gene has always been elusive. He's private, and when he retired, he just didn't want to do much. He settled in Santa Fe, New Mexico, a beautiful home and wonderful wife. And I know that they had a good life there. But you end up with a film like ours, which is going to play in the Marine Corps National Museum in Quantico, Virginia, forever. And it's a very emotional film. I knew that I wanted a narrator who had been in the Marine Corps, knew what it was all about, and knew the dedication that every Marine has to the Corps and to their fellow soldiers. And the theme of the film was once a Marine, always a Marine. And Gene, I knew, felt that. I'd read things about his Corps service. You know, he never thought that he was a good Marine. He always thought that he was a little bit of a slacker, but he actually did some jokes in the narration regarding that. But he still felt this super dedication, super patriotism towards both the Corps and his country.
And so what was the process of working with him like?
Well, it was interesting because once he said reluctantly, yeah, okay, I'll do it. We set up a recording session in Santa Fe, and then I was going to fly out with my team to record him. And the day before I flew, his wife called me, and I was, I was on pins and needles because I was worried, oh gosh, he's gotten cold feet. He doesn't want to do it now. And she said, look, Greg, he's so desperate to do this. He really wants to. He loves the script. The script brought tears to his eyes. But he doesn't want to be around people. He is conscious of the way he looks now. And he doesn't look like the movie star Gene Hackman anymore. And he just told me, she told me, that he could do a much better job if I wasn't there in the studio with him. Because he just gets nervous when he's around others. And I said, okay, I understand. You know, you wouldn't have made this call if it wasn't a serious thing. And so let's do it remotely. And sure enough, he gave me 3 to 4 hours of brilliant material. We did all kinds of great ad-libs and stories that he was involved with, including really cute things about being in the Marines and how bad he thought he was as a Marine himself, but how much he tried and just how much it meant to him. It shaped him up as a human, being in the Marines. Got him ready for being an actor and taking defeat along with success. And he was just one of those guys who could tell a story and it would rivet you because it was filled with humor and emotion. And you cannot see our film without tearing up many, many times. And it's all because of Gene. Here I am getting emotional now thinking about it. But it's true. He was probably, in my estimation, one of the 5 best American actors ever. And I think you'd hear that same thing from Clint Eastwood or any other director who's worked with him.
Greg McIlvery there, director of We the Marines, remembering Gene Hackman. Just time for our closing headlines. Sir Keir Starmer and President Trump have said their talks at the White House today have been a major success. In a joint news conference, they said they'd made progress towards ending the Ukraine war and on agreeing a trade deal between Britain and the US. And that is it from the World Tonight team for tonight. From me, Jane Hill, and everyone here, have a good night.
Studio direction was by Charlotta Hadroy-Tuzimska. The editor was Michael Innes.
Warum nur an der Oberfläche kratzen? Bei einem Atemwegsinfekt ganz dünnes Eis.
Wenn Erkältungsviren auf die Bronchien schlagen, packt Umkaluabo den Infekt mit der Wurzel. Denn es lindert nicht nur die Symptome, sondern bekämpft auch die Erreger.
Umkaluabo.
Unaussprechlich, aber ausgesprochen gut.
Zu Risiken und Nebenwirkungen lesen Sie die Packungsbeilage und fragen Sie Ihre Ärztin, Ihren Arzt oder in Ihrer Apotheke.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.